Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Maggiorno. I'm joined today by Vin Forte.
Hey, that's me.
Yeah, it is. Vin, how are you?
Good. Been working on the, at the time of this recording, the WrestleWrap Christmas special.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that should already be out by the time you hear this. You can go back in time and listen to that. And yeah, that should be...
go back in time.
Yeah, that should be fun. And go check that out. Emilio Sparks, who was on a recent episode of PCMC.
Yes.
Was also involved in that. So if you liked him, you'll probably like this.
Yes.
I've been trying to get Emilio into more sci-fi.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because what we're going to talk about today is, I'm going to go ahead and say, a fucking sci-fi cult classic. Or should be a sci-fi cult classic.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about 1993's Super Mario Brothers.
Ooh. Copyright.
So, all right. So, if you know anything about the Super Mario Brothers movie,
forget it.
Well, I was going to say, if you know anything about it, you know that it's universally reviled. And it's often the butt of many, many jokes.
But it's found a cult audience, like, because if you take it on its own merits and like, okay, there's two ways to look at this movie.
Yeah.
Is this movie a great representation of the source material?
No.
No. God, no. But is this a weird, interesting, like, experiment?
Yeah.
Yeah, like if someone played a game of telephone and like down the line explained to someone what Super Mario Brothers was without showing them the games or any like concept art or anything like that, and then said, okay, now with this information, go make a science fiction movie.
Yeah.
This is probably what they would make.
Yeah. I agree with you totally. And that's why I wanted to record this episode, because I watched this movie probably every couple of years. I've seen it a lot. I saw it twice in theaters as a kid. It remains a soft spot in my heart. I'm sure there's some nostalgia there. But, you know, given my last viewing of it, which I was, at that time, a adult, I still think it's a good film. I think you hit it on the nose. Is it a good Super Mario Brothers movie? No. Is it a good movie for kids? Probably not. It's a little dark for kids.
Yeah.
But to me, it seems like a perfect midnight movie. And I'm really shocked that it hasn't become that. Because I could see this. It's got all the elements of a midnight movie. It's, you've never really heard of it. It's weird. It's got weirdly comedic moments, but also it's got like dark sci-fi. It's got crazy looking aesthetics. The set was created by the guy who worked on Blade Runner, and he made the set of the main sort of set, which is the world.
The underworld.
Yeah.
Dino World.
Right. Dino World. He made that based on one version of the script. And then when they ended up shooting, it was another version entirely.
Oh, there were like four versions of the script. It was like basically whenever they went to an actor to be in this movie.
Yeah.
They were like, hey, here's a version of the script. Do you like it? Like, oh, I love this version of the script. Great. And basically every actor showed up on set and was like, wait a minute, this is not, none of these are the versions of the scripts that like any of us saw.
Right. And then, yeah, all of them were unhappy.
The directors were apparently awful people. Who would throw hot coffee on extras.
Yeah.
And were people who had never really directed a movie before. They had worked on, their big claim to fame was Max Headroom.
Right. Which was like a TV movie, but not a big budget movie.
But like, it makes sense if you see the movie.
Right.
That like, oh, and then you hear they did Max Headroom. It's like, oh, that makes perfect sense now.
I understand why they hired them. Because if you look at a lot of the conversation around the time, what they were saying and what even Nintendo of America was saying was, this could be our Batman, our 1989 right. Batman, where you take something that skews for a younger audience, but you kind of cool it up, you kind of beef it up, make it a little bit darker. But, you know, it went through so many screenplays. The guy who wrote Rain Man wrote a version, and in his version, it was basically Rain Man with Mario and Luigi. Right. The version that most of the actors signed on to, which supposedly was good, was said to be like almost like Shrek. It was like it was Mario and Luigi, but they were going through like a fairy tale world where they were like making fun of fairy tales. And a lot of people were like, oh, that was kind of a witty script. I like that one. You know, at one point, Dennis Hopper, who plays Koopa, he said, you know what? There's so many rewrites. I just stop reading them. I just kind of just go in and do whatever. He stopped caring. He almost everyone who made this movie, when asked what was the worst part of your career, almost all of them said this movie.
Yeah, Bob Hoskins like broke his hand.
Yes. Well, because they were drinking and driving. Bob Hoskins, very early on, Bob Hoskins was like, fuck this, and just started doing shots on set. And John Leguizamo, who was an up-and-coming guy, he actually turned down a development deal for a sitcom at a network to do this movie. And he was like, oh, all right, well, this older actor is drinking. I guess this is what we do. So they were fucking, he was trying to keep up with Bob Hoskins. So they're drinking. And then there's a scene where they have to, there's a scene on Earth in the beginning where they are chasing down another plumbing van because they're plumbers. And fucking John Leguizamo was driving and he's drunk. And
he makes like a sharp turn and the door, it's like a panel van. So like, yeah, the door just slides in
and
yeah. And basically Bob Hoskins had his hand like halfway out the empty space.
Right. Broke his
hand. Then the door slammed into his hand and broke his hand.
Right. Cause they were drinking and driving. And, you know, drinking and making movies. Apparently he almost, I don't know, like, how were they really driving? Why weren't they on a flatbed? Because apparently he almost tipped the whole fucking truck over.
I don't know, man. This is the 90s. I don't, maybe they were just like, ah, fuck it. We'll just do it. We'll do it live.
We'll do it live. Yeah. The film is directed by a husband and wife team, Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jenkin. And as Vin said, their big claim to fame was Max Headroom, Ask Your Grandparents. Or I think isn't Max Headroom in Back to the Future 2? Or he's parodied in Back to the Future 2?
Oh, I have no idea. I know he did like Pepsi commercials.
Yeah. Well, that's what these guys did. They mostly did commercials and music videos.
They did the Money for Nothing video. They were those.
Yes. People. This was at the time in the late 80s, early 90s, where Hollywood was looking to video directors. And they were like, oh, this is going to be the new crop of filmmakers. Oh, you made a video? Come make this giant movie based on a kid's property. And this is what fucking happens. So, you know, look, but obviously we're kind of making fun of it, but it's charming. I think it works. It just doesn't work as an adaptation of this lighthearted video game series.
Yeah, because here's the I'm going to tell you the plot of the video game.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to run down from memory, because it should also be noted, this is without a doubt my favorite quote unquote like bad movie, like guilty pleasure movie.
Yeah.
See it a million times.
Yeah, me too.
So basically the plot of the games, which most of you probably already know, and we'll even simplify it because there are only like three or four games out at this point.
Right.
Princess is captured by King Bowser, who's a giant lizard creature.
Right.
And Mario is a plumber, and he goes through pipes through the Mushroom Kingdom and has to save Princess Peach from other dinosaur creatures. That's it. That's really the plot of the movie. Right. It's in like the plot of the games. It's in like a fantasy world. Very cartoony, high saturation colors.
Right. And in the first couple of games, they're in the Mushroom Kingdom. Which is this sort of fairy tale esque world. And then in the fourth game, Mario World, they're in Dino whatever or Dino World. And that game came out during production, which is or when they were writing it, which is why like there's a lot of dinosaur elements in it. And Yoshi's actually in the movie, just thrown in a very weird way.
Yeah.
I actually love the Yoshi of it because it's so insane that they went this route with it. He's sort of super realistic looking raptor.
Oh, yeah. But he's still kind of adorable.
And he's still got the tongue.
Yeah.
He's also a fucking slave.
Yeah, he's just kind of there to be in chains.
Yeah, this movie is made to make children cry.
Yeah, so I gave you the plot of the game.
Yes, please.
Very simple, basically an elevator pitch. Here's from memory, from my memory, the plot of the movie. There's a princess from another dimension who is left in a basket in front of a church.
Right.
And she has an artifact around her neck that we don't know what that does yet. So she's left there. She's an orphan. She's running around the world as an orphan.
Right.
And then we meet the Mario brothers, who are plumbers in Brooklyn, real world, real life plumbers. And the first like 20 minutes of the movie are them doing plumber shit. Mario trying to like mack it to middle-aged Italian women. Luigi being
a steady girlfriend.
He does have a steady girlfriend.
Yeah.
Luigi is his adopted son. It's never made clear, but it is made clear that they have the same last name.
Yeah, he's like his adopted brother or something. Can you adopt a brother?
Yeah, like they don't make it clear, but it's like a father-son, father-brother situation.
Yeah.
And also John Leguizamo, by his namesake, is not Italian.
Right.
And then they meet up with Daisy, who John Leguizamo is trying to mack it to.
Right.
And then on a double date with Mario and his girlfriend, they stumble upon two of Koopa's henchmen, one of them played by what's his face from Short Circuit,
Academy Award winner Fisher Stevens.
Yes, Fisher Stevens, dressed like the Butabi brothers from Night at the Roxbury, by the way, for the entire yeah. movie for some reason. And so they're chasing Princess Daisy to get this artifact. They get it. They get chased down by the Mario brothers and Daisy into a cave where, and I'm pretty sure this is one of the few ideas that you can't say for certain, but did show up later in Mario 64, which is the idea of jumping into a wall and then like that wall taking you to another dimension.
Yes. Yes.
So they go, and now the movie opens up, because now they're in this Blade Runner-esque dino world. And now they've got to rescue the princess. So now you're thinking, okay, well, now we're getting closer to the game, because it's like now they're on the mission. Now it's the Mario brothers have to save the princess.
Oh, no, boom. No.
Not quite that simple. Like I said, this is now Blade Runner.
The game was created by David Lynch.
Right. Like I said, this is now Blade Runner. So Blade Runner rules apply. It's a dystopian future, but it's like underground. But it's also like in another dimension. And we learn that the rock that was around Daisy's neck is going to be used to merge the dino world with the human world, which causes the Twin Towers to prematurely be destroyed before 9/11. Yeah. And then there's a gun.
You can't blame them for that.
No, we can't blame them for that.
But it is
weird. Or can we? But then there's like guns that could turn you, that can devolve you into monkeys,
right? And they're based on the super scope, whatever.
Right, based on the super scope. And then there's Goombas, but they're not what you think they are. They're actually gigantic. Haha, big twist. And then Big Bertha's in it, who was a big fish enemy in the game, but she's a big husky black lady who dances now.
Who runs what was a strip club, and there were actual erotic naked dancers on set. And then I think either the studio or Nintendo was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Right.
And like remove them last minute. So now it's just like a dance club. She's the proprietor of this dance club. And she's horny for Mario.
Oh, she's way horny for Mario. And then we're even forgetting King Koopa, who's played by Dennis Hopper.
Oh, my God.
You would think, well, he's a big dinosaur, right? Well, no. But he does turn into a dinosaur at the end of the movie for like 5 seconds before turning into a big pile of goo.
But don't worry, when he does that, he doesn't look like Bowser from the games.
No, not at all.
He just looks like a very bad facsimile of like the T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, and then basically, so now the Mario brothers are going through Dino World, but you're thinking to yourself, well, okay, they're going to go through like lush, exotic kingdom. No, again, like I said, you got to pay attention. This is Blade Runner.
Right.
So they're going through corridors. Lots of corridors.
Industrial looking.
Big circular fans, big tan pipes, and that's pretty much like the rest of the movie.
But there's also, to try to tie in the idea that, you know, the famous power-up for Mario in the very first level is he eats a mushroom and he becomes Super Mario. So to tie in that power up, there's fungus everywhere.
Right, like, because gross, the skin was turned fungus. Into fungus.
Right. And it's kind of gross looking. It just looks like snot everywhere.
And then, like, the Goombas, which I mentioned before, they dance now.
Yes, they do dance. Yeah,
they dance, and also everyone walks the dinosaur.
Yes, that was
the dominant song from the soundtrack that plays in this movie.
I loved that song as a kid. I remember
it's a great song.
Song on the box.
Oh, absolutely.
Ask your grandparents, kids, about the box.
Yeah, just ask your grandparents about the box. And no, we're not talking about that Frank Langella movie.
No. We're talking about a cable channel where you could call in and order a video. And then, I don't know, in an hour or two, it'll come on. And I think it's like, it was like $3 or something.
$3?
Yeah, you paid for it in some way, didn't you? No,
I don't know.
Anyway, kids, it was weird. It was a weird time.
Yeah. But so then they save the kingdom, and that's the end of the movie. And then they tease that the sequel was going to be Donkey Kong.
Right. Yeah. It has the hubris to end on a cliffhanger. Princess Daisy runs in looking full Sarah Connor. She's got on like the tank top and the gun. And she's like, Mario, Luigi, I need your help. You're never going to believe this one. And then, like,
oh, I'll believe anything now.
Yeah. Cut to next year. No, nothing happened.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point, which is the movie aesthetically is really nothing like the games. In fact, Nintendo had to fight the directors to put them in their classic red and green overalls,
which they only get in like the last 25 minutes of the movie.
Right, because the directors finally were like, fine, they didn't want them to be in them. So aesthetically, it's nothing like the games, and tone wise it's nothing like the games, yet the film is filled with weird analogs.
There's a lot, like, if you freeze frame any section of the dino world, you'll see really interesting, places will be named like Bullet Bills.
Right. So it's full, like, yeah, like there's
big vote Koopa signs everywhere with like Dennis Hopper kissing a baby lizard, which is really funny.
Like they meet this vagrant who is Toad, and you only know it because at one point they call him Toad. And is he Toad from the game? No, Toad from the game is a little cute walking, talking mushroom. And this is a fucking...
This is Mojo Nixon.
Right, with a fucking guitar on. So, like, so you got that. You got Big Bertha. Big Bertha in the game is simply a... It's a fish. It's a big red fish. But this is a big woman wearing a red outfit. A
red leather outfit who's, like, really seducing Mario.
Yeah. So it's, like, it's filled with all these analogs to things in the games. It's, like... It's like a translation of, it's not an adaptation, it's a translation. And you gotta understand this, kids. This was the first movie based on a video game. And if you think no one respects video games now, at this point, Hollywood was like, had no respect for it. So they were like, they kind of went about it as an impossible task, which I think was the wrong mindset, because there's at least enough of a story there. They could have got closer.
They absolutely could have gotten closer.
It reminds me of how they did the Masters of the Universe movie, where they kind of start on this wrong foot of going, well, we can't do that. So it's like, well, no, why can't you do that? Why can't you have, you know, Battle Cat? Why can't, you know what I mean? So it starts off on this thing of like, well, that's this, you know, a video game is a little frivolity. So we're just going to be sort of inspired by it.
Also, we have not mentioned yet the sort of, I don't know if we would have picked up on it 10 years ago or even like 5 years ago, but given the current climate, there's a big elephant in the room, which is that Dennis Hopper is basically playing Donald Trump.
Yes, he is.
From the hair to the hand motions to everything, like he is playing a Trump.
Because they take him from what he is in the game, which is a big dinosaur, and they make it, there's this whole thing in the movie about evolution and de-evolution. He creates a machine to de-evolve people, and when he puts you in it, you turn into a dumb dinosaur, which is what the Goombas are. So he is an evolved T-Rex. So, you know, what he looks like is, he's Dennis Hopper, but he's got like this weird hair, and he's wearing a suit, and he's sort of in complete control of everything. He's a despot. He's a dictator. And it is this weird, scary world. I mean, I think as a kid, the world and the people in the world are the most sort of oddly disturbing thing.
Because they're like human, but they have like weird traits.
Right, because they're the idea is like when the meteorite that killed the dinosaurs happened, it didn't really kill them. It created two universes, one where mammals can evolve on the surface, like our world, and the other is this underworld where dinosaurs would evolve. So they're humanoid, but they're supposed to be evolved dinosaurs. But they're also assholes. Like, really early on, they meet an old lady, and you think she's going to be a sweet old lady, and she fucking tases Mario.
And again, going back to the design, like, there's cars, but the cars have, like, weird, like, bumper car stuff attached to them.
Yeah, very Mad Max-y.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the cops are, like, very scary looking, and it's pretty, yeah, and when Mario and Luigi
scary first... Scary cops, you say.
I know. Well, you know, it's a fantasy. When Mario and Luigi first get there, they're, like, arrested.
yeah, and specifically the cops are like, oh, we got plumbers in section 38. It's like, what? Like,
yeah, whoever, again, there's so many people who wrote this movie, but whoever, somebody along the line thought it was really funny to lean into the plumber thing. So, like, and the whole reason there are plumbers in the game is because warp pipes are a big part of the gameplay. So, like, Mario goes through pipes.
Right.
But in this, it's like Koopa hates plumbers, and it never makes sense why. He's just like, oh, my God, they're plumbers. I hate plumbers. Get those plumbers. It's just like the amount of times people say plumbers in it.
I know. It might as well be like Revenge of the Nerds. It's just every 2 seconds like, oh, you plumbers.
You fucking plumbers. And Mario uses his plumbing to save the day. At one point, they're going through a pipe and there are Goombas chasing them. On like a, it's kind of like a bobsled situation, and Mario sees a hole in the ground and he puts a fucking wrench in it, so the Goombas hit it and they fucking fly all over, and it's wild. But again, to switch to the more positive, it's a feast for the eyes. I mean, they clearly were going off half cocked, and everybody working on the movie was doing their own movie, but everybody was trying something.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things that I don't think gets enough attention is that we all talk about how great and interesting the set design is.
Yeah.
How perfectly 90s is everyone's clothing in this movie?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. All the women, like, that are captured near the end of the movie, like, all their, like, going out clothing that they were captured in is, like, perfectly, like, going out in 1993.
Right.
Like, all the date clothing that Mario... Like, when Mario's trying to mack at the Big Bertha, he's got on this, like, obnoxiously 90s, like, mustard yellow suit.
Yeah. And by the way, I loved one of the things that they... I think they get it from Bertha is they get these boots that let them jump. Again, it's a way of... It's making an analog to the jumping in the game. So, right. Like, they can do these power jumps with these boots. And I still think they're cool looking.
Yeah, I think, like, if you were going to translate that to a movie, like, that part of it worked. It's just a shame they weren't dressed like that for more of the movie.
Yeah. And, yeah, like, there were action figures for this movie, and I was just looking at them again online on eBay, and I still think they're pretty cool. I like the design of Mario and Luigi, especially towards the end when they get into, they're not wearing overalls like they do in the game. They're wearing like jumpsuits.
But it works.
It's the color scheme. Yeah. It's not bad. It's cool. And I guess another positive thing I would say is even though he's clearly drunk and hating it, Bob Hoskins is great.
Bob Hoskins is Mario.
Yeah. He was such an amazing actor. And even when he's fucking not trying, he's fucking great. And
And John Leguizamo is great. John Leguizamo has a lot of charisma. Like, I get it.
Yeah. You, him and Samantha Mathis, who played Princess Daisy, they actually started dating when they were filming the movie. So there's a lot of chemistry between them. I actually think there's really good chemistry between Mario and Luigi.
I've always loved the chemistry between the entire cast in this movie.
Yeah.
And honestly, again, going back to the set design, like we're talking about the set design in the Dino World.
Yeah.
But in terms of like capturing like a snapshot of what Brooklyn looked like at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did a really good job.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, Mario looks like your Italian uncle. Like when they're going on a double date and Mario's like, he's got the fucking, he's eating meatballs and he's got the fucking, you know, the thing in his shirt, the fucking napkin down the shirt. And I was like, yeah, I know that guy.
And then put the charm on it, Luigi.
When I was a kid and I found out that he actually was English and had an English accent.
Oh, blew my mind.
Blew my fucking mind. Because he's also Eddie Valiant from.
Right. So if you're a kid, all I knew him from at that time were the Mario Brothers movie and Roger Rabbit.
Right, where he's a gruff Italian man. Right. Some people will say like, oh, he's just doing Eddie Valiant. But I would push back against it. He's doing an American accent. But
I'm going to say Eddie Valiant's doing a Mario.
Well, that makes zero sense, Vin. No, because Eddie Valiant is dejected and Mario is pretty nice. In the beginning, Mario is sort of sweet and helping Luigi. And then when the adventure starts, he's kind of like an old man, like, I don't know, I don't trust this, whatever. You know, I think he actually played Mario great. Better than the other choices. I mean, let's talk about
like Tom Hanks.
Yeah, Tom Hanks got really fucking close. And I think it was Nintendo who rejected him because at this time, his most recent films were The Burbs and some other movie that failed. So
yeah, Philadelphia didn't happen yet. Forrest Gump didn't happen yet.
He was on his comedic downturn and they thought, oh, this guy's moving out of here. And but they changed the script for him. They made him younger. So like they were constantly changing things for people. And the first person on board to play Mario was Dustin Hoffman, who
that's where the Rain Man script came in.
Right. And he really wanted to play it. Like he was behind that.
Well, it should also be noted that apparently like several members of the cast had no idea this was based on a video game.
Yeah, Bob Hoskins, I think, didn't figure it out until like on set.
but Bob Hoskins didn't know until he saw his son playing the game of the movie he was going to be in and asked his son, what are you playing?
Right. And then he took a shot of something. Down the hatch. So Dustin Hoffman first. And then they didn't want him or he dropped out. I forget. Then they really wanted Danny DeVito.
Which maybe would have been good.
That would have been okay. That would have been okay. But he didn't want to do it. He was just like, no, fuck no. And then Tom Hanks. And then we get the Bob Hoskins, which I think, you know what? That's the best choice.
But it's just crazy to think that someone as good as Bob Hoskins was like 4 or 5 names down the list.
Right, right. Well, that's the weird thing, because it's like this, it was the first video game movie, but this was a big property and it had name recognition.
But it's interesting because you think about the way the movie flopped.
Yeah.
And it's now 2020, but it's now 2020, almost 30 years later. And Nintendo is just now carefully revisiting the idea of doing a Mario movie.
Right. But it's going to be animated. It's going to be by the people who did Despicable Me, which I think is the right choice.
Exactly.
Well, you're right. I mean, for a product that's this big, for it to be this many, that's how toxic it was for that long. That's how radioactive it was for that long, that they only now, generations later, are they broaching the idea of let's do it again. And we should say this is the 35th anniversary of the first Super Mario Brothers game. And also in the last couple of weeks, we've been seeing videos and images from Super Nintendo World at Universal Studios Japan, which is a Mario themed park, which looks amazing. Awesome.
Like, you want to do, like, they have a whole Mario Kart, like, track.
Yeah. And, like, they have, like, basically, like, what Disney has with Magic Bands. But when you have them, you can, like, hit the blocks. Like, there's a whole game you can play in the world outside of even the rides and stuff.
It's amazing. But, you know, the one thing we don't have is a anniversary Blu-ray of the Mario Brothers movie. Because that actually was released in, I think, like, Germany or, like, somewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
And it's got, like, a whole documentary and, like, interviews with the cast. Like, they got everyone together for it. It's got, like, trailers and
right. It's very hard to find this movie. It's not the only place you could find. It's not streaming anywhere currently. And you can find, like, DVD or Blu-ray, like, very bare bones Blu-rays that were from a couple years ago. You could find them, like, on eBay or whatever, but there's no, like, current release. It's kind of buried, and it's not, I think it's not fair. Who do you think's behind that? You think it's Nintendo behind that or what?
I don't know, because, again, like, what boggles my mind is that they put out this massive Blu-ray, like, re-release in other countries, but we haven't gotten it yet. And I wonder if that's strictly because we're just a bigger market and they're,
they're,
you know, it's like when they were going to release the new Spider-Man movies. Mm-hmm. And for a little while, they held off on re-releasing the, like, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies.
Also, you think maybe they're preparing for this new Mario movie and they don't want to,
they don't want new fans to, like, know. Like, if you know about it, you know about it. But, like, they don't want people walking into a store and there being, like, some weird market confusion.
You know, the way I always thought of it as a fan, both of the games and the movie, is, you know, when you make a movie of a property, especially back then in the 90s, there was this feeling like this is the movie. You know, Mario, the movie. Tom and Jerry, the movie. Like, movies at that time were the ultimate medium. Nothing was more important. And if you made a movie of something, oh my God, was that official? And for me, I think I always thought of this as, like, this weird alternative reality cousin. Like, I love it as much as I love other Mario things, but it is not Mario the movie. You know what I mean? It's wild. I mean, it is wild, and that's why I like it. And I don't like it. I, to be completely honest with you, I do not like it in an ironic way. I don't like it like The Room. I don't like it like Plan 9 from Outer Space, where it's so bad it's good. I actually like it. It's actually interesting. Got good performances. It's a curio. It's a weird sci-fi movie. You know, if it wasn't Mario, if it wasn't called Mario and the names weren't names from the Mario games, I think this movie would actually be more fondly remembered. It would be like Mad Max or something. People would be like, oh, you ever see that crazy movie about the plumbers? And you know what I mean? It's because it's Mario, it's thought of as bad.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Like, I've always, again, going back to what we were saying at the beginning, in a vacuum, it's a bad Mario movie, but it's not a bad science fiction movie.
Not at all. Not at all. And you know what? Let me say this in defense of the production. Whenever a movie fails and it had a hard production, people go, well, look, there were 7 screenwriters and 2 different directors and recast. Let me tell you something. Every Hollywood movie does that. Every Hollywood movie. But when it succeeds, no one talks about it. Do you realize when Marvel made Iron Man, they rewrote the script a million times, and they rewrote the script based on what Robert Downey Jr. wanted and what Jon Favreau wanted, that they were getting new pages every day.
Yeah, that's the Hollywood game, baby.
Right. Firing a writer and rehiring, you know, The Wizard of Oz went through multiple directors.
And you know what?
Who directed that movie, because different segments of the movie are directed by different directors.
And you know what? Going back to the Iron Man thing, like, they're probably right to do that, because it, like, we'll take the case of Iron Man. You would want Robert Downey Jr.'s input because he's going to be playing this character for like 10 different movies. So of course he's got to get his say. You don't want a writer to come in like right off the bat and like ruin Iron Man.
Yeah. Like, so when people go, oh, did you hear about the production? It was crazy. It's like, Most movies are like that. Most it's movies. Like when they,
the most recent movie I can remember where there was a big to do about that, that I think actually like affected perception, was Solo.
Right.
And because Solo they reshot turned out fine. A lot of it.
I think Solo, we've talked about this to death. Me and Vin are huge Solo fans. I think it's one of the best things in the Disney era. And I think not only is it one of the best things, I think it's actually one of the least messy things. You know, like when I look at The Rise of Skywalker, I see a bunch of different voices and too many people, too many chefs. When I look at Solo, I see a good script and I see Ron Howard as a director. Like, I don't, that doesn't look like a mess to me.
Right. It feels like, right, they made a big to-do about like, oh, well, they took out the Lego movie guys.
Right.
And they brought in Ron Howard and it's going to create this whole mishmash.
Right.
Because honestly, like, that's kind of what happened with Rogue One.
Right.
But you're right.
Which what feels like is, a mess. Rogue right. One feels like a mess. The tone is all over Rogue One. The pacing's all over the place.
Right. But what Solo feels like is, you're right, it feels just like they kept the bulk of the the Lego movie guy's script and they just had Ron Howard like smooth out the direction.
Right. Right. And this goes back to the fact that ideologically, I am not an auteur theory person. I think that the prevalence of the auteur theory and the idea that films have a singular vision is part of why people see this as bad. They go, well, how can this isn't a work of art because the director changed or the writers changed. And you know what I mean? They were constantly recasting the creative team. And to me, it's like, well, movies take hundreds of people to make them. And a movie is always going to be a weird product. And to me, that's still art. Like, I don't care if, you know, going back to The Wizard of Oz, can you look at The Wizard of Oz and say that's a bad film? That's one of the most beloved films of all time.
Well, in the auteur theory as
the production was a mess.
Well, in the auteur theory as a sort of cultural idea also is very misleading because people think of the auteur theory as being like a very high bar, like, oh, you know, the greats are, you know, they all are auteurs,
right?
You know who's more of an auteur than most filmmakers? Fucking Kevin Smith.
That's funny. When you said that, I was gonna say Michael Bay.
And Michael Bay as well.
Michael Bay,
I would put him in with that.
He if you look at a certain definition of the auteur, like Andrew Saris's definition, a Michael Bay movie, I immediately know that it's a Michael Bay movie just by looking at it. Like, there's a distinct style there. That's, I mean, he's an auteur. Now, it's this, you know, but that's the thing when a movie fails. Whenever a movie fails, there's always a sort of postmortem of, like, playing the blame game. And these directors, by the way, never directed a movie again.
No, well, they were also shitty
assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think part of that is also why the movie didn't totally succeed, because I think they did themselves no favors in making enemies out of everyone, including the crew. The crew who made the actual crew members who like did the production work, they would make t-shirts with mean shit that the director said on the t-shirts, and they would wear them openly. It was like an open revolt, and the fucking Bob Hoskins fucking hated them.
Oh yeah. Well, there was a famous story that we tipped our hat to before where Rocky Morton was like dissatisfied with something and he goes up to this guy, this like extra wearing a prosthetic.
Yeah.
And pours hot coffee into his prosthetic.
Right. And the guy screams because it was hot coffee. And Rocky Morton now is like, no, that's a wrong story. I didn't know it was hot coffee. I was just trying to make him look dirtier.
But still, there's people who do that. Why are you throwing your coffee into someone? Like, right. That doesn't match.
Right. Apparently, they were, like, super arrogant. They also thought that they were better than the project. It seems like from the get-go, they were like, oh, this is a video game movie. We don't really care about this that much. We have to turn it into our thing. And also...
That never works well, because you see... Like, you have to embrace... Like, whatever project you're working on, you have to go in wanting to do a good job.
Right. And the Wachowskis, they were not. Because the actors all said, like, yeah, one would say one thing, another would say the other thing. So they were not on the same page, which is when you have two directors, that's the last thing you want.
And then they're not even a couple anymore, so.
No. I mean, it's kind of sad. I saw Rocky Morton was talking about, like, years later, he was, like, close to getting a job directing a movie. And they were like, whoa, wait, you directed Mario? Like, you almost feel bad that the rest of their lives are marred by this experience.
But I feel like, again, I really do believe it goes back to them being awful human beings.
Right, because you could be a bad filmmaker and still have connections and make movies. I mean, there are bad filmmakers out there that still have careers.
Right, like, you're telling me that, like, you can't salvage anything from the Super Mario Brothers movie, like, to show off on a real, like, even, like, to do smaller projects. It's like when you're a coach on, like, a sporting team in the NBA or the NFL, and your team has, like, a losing record 5 years in a row. It's like you have fans going, oh, well, that person's never going to get a job again. And it's like, well, they'll get a job. They're just not going to get a big budget coaching or directing job. They'll be an offensive coordinator. They'll be, like, a hired hand. But, like, they're not going to get – yeah, they may not get the big job. But, like, you're telling me Rocky Morton can't get work at all over the past 30 years? Like, I don't believe that.
Right. You know, being an asshole is a big deal.
Well, someone put it a good way, and this relates more to comedy, but I guess would relate the same way to acting and just, like, in the film industry in general, which is, I once heard a comedian say, you shouldn't ever be an asshole to anyone because these are going to be your coworkers for life.
Right.
Like, you never know where they're going to pop up. Like, you never know who you're going to be working with. So, like, why not just, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't give a shit whether they work again or not, to be totally honest with you. I do wish the film could get a second look. I feel like, let's give it a Blu-ray release. Let's give it a 4K release. Let's put it on some streaming service. Look, we see the power of streaming services where something will go on streaming and it can have a whole new life now. Like, young people find it and they're like, hey, did you see this thing? You know, look at, like, Avatar just got a whole new life. If it was put on, like, you know, anywhere, I think it could get a new life, and I think it kind of deserves one. I think it's a good film.
Yeah, Nintendo, release the 4K cut.
Hashtag release the Snyder Cut.
Who are these idiots that want the Snyder Cut, really?
Come on. My God. Well, they got it. They got it.
They got it, and you know what? It has been confirmed Batman will drop an F-bomb.
Oh, wow. So edgy. Okay. I think we've made our case, Vin.
Yes.
This is PCMC. I'm Mike Mongiorno. I'm joined with Vin Forte. PCMC is a podcast that comes out every single Wednesday. We are about pop culture. We're about everything. I tell you what, pick up your device right now, and I want you to scroll through our library and tell me if you don't see an episode that tickles your fancy. I'm sure there's some in there. We talk about everything from the highbrow to the lowbrow to the midbrow. You can follow PCMC at PCMC on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
Whoa,
we're on the TikTok. We end every episode by saying, go bye-bye.
Bye-bye.